Welcome to Brain Ignition Radio. Here I share with you all of the knowledge and resources I've gained as it relates to nutrition, exercise, and brain health. By sharing these interesting case studies, in-depth discussions, and research, I hope that we can learn together and improve our current health and the health of future generations. I'm your host, Chet Binning, and I thank you for tuning in. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Brain Ignition Radio. Super pumped for today because I have another awesome guest on the show. I'm here with Cody. So Cody is a former athlete. He's also an entrepreneur. He runs Head First Movement. We're going to get into that later for sure. So Cody's story, another incredible one, which again, we're going to get into, but I'll just give you a basic intro here. So after spending 3 years battling mental illness and losing four of his friends to suicide, he found out that the root cause of his depression was concussions he had while playing hockey. So he did eventually receive effective treatment. However, appreciated that his ongoing battle would require optimal mindset, mental health strategies, especially in order to be a high functioning entrepreneur and keep his business going. And so this is what fuels Cody today. This is the experience and tools that he draws on to run his business. I also had the privilege of working with Cody along the way. This is how I first came to know Cody, and I really appreciate you being on the show today, Cody, and sharing your story. I'm really excited to dig into this. But yeah, thank you very much for coming on. How are you doing today?
Good, man. Unreal. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to get into it.
Awesome. So I like to start these with a couple icebreakers. So first one, talking about food here, do you prefer sweet or salty?
Salty now. I used to be a big sweet guy, but I broke the pattern.
Really? Interesting. All right, cool. In the gym, what's your favorite movement or exercise if you had to pick one?
So COVID's really kind of thrown a wrench into this. I used to be like a train more of like powerlifting style.
Yeah,
I used to be like squat, bench, deadlift. Anything outside of that was just super foreign. Didn't want to do it. But, you know, now that COVID hit and the gyms are closed, I've really got into biking and running. So nice. I'm actually training for a marathon right now, and I love to run. So that's been really fun.
That's awesome. And remind me, where do you live? Like somewhere near Collingwood?
Yeah, I'm like right by Blue Mountain Village.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Because I remember you would have some pretty awesome scenic morning runs with your dog.
Yeah. Pretty lucky. I moved here about a year and a half ago from
nice.
The city. So it was good timing. And yeah, I love it here.
Awesome. And then last one, speaking of dogs, what's the funniest thing that your dog does? Probably hard to pick if it's a dog, right?
It's hard to pick. She's all over the map. I mean, something that kind of came up recently, my roommate loves to do yoga back. And Zoe often goes out there and kind of sits with her, but she'll also kind of like copy Reagan. But like Reagan will go up into like a mountain pose or whatever, put her arms above her head, and Zoe would be up behind her like going like that too.
That's amazing. Yeah, my dog Benson, he gets a lot of shout outs on the episode. Actually, my fiance Keelan was joking earlier today that he gets just way more shout outs than she does. And what do you say? Like, he just does too many ridiculous things to leave out. Awesome. So Cody, I want to start things today with you just sharing a little bit more about your story. So your experiences with these concussions and recovery and really kind of how you started this journey in the first place.
Sure. So I guess I'll kind of just jump right into it. Basically, like growing up, played a ton of sports. As I got older, hockey took a bit of a priority. I didn't play professionally. I wasn't that good by any means, but I did do the whole AAA and junior hockey thing. And during that time, I had a few concussions, looking back, probably several, but you know, none of them really took me out of the game for that long. Like I never really took anything that seriously, and I never really thought much of them. But in my last year of junior, so like second, third year university, I started to withdraw from things and started to feel a little different. And, you know, within 2-3 months, I found myself super anxious, super depressed, ended up leaving school, quitting hockey. I was like drinking every day and isolating myself and was in a really bad spot and didn't necessarily know. But obviously, you know, those actions and that behavior kind of drew the attention of my parents. And and they kind of stepped in, and with their help, we started looking for answers. So naturally, we had no idea where to start. Like, mental health or mental illness, and depression and anxiety weren't even really part of our vocabulary back then. And, you know, naturally, kind of the first stop was the family doctor. So with their help, I went into there and kind of unpacked how I was feeling with the best of my ability. And, you know, without blinking an eye, you know, he just looked at me and he goes, "You have depression. There's a chemical imbalance in your brain between dopamine and serotonin," or whatever he said. "And I'm going to give you this pill and it's going to solve all your problems." And, you know, I left that appointment feeling pretty optimistic, but, you know, that was the start of, like you said before, 3 years and 30 plus doctors trying to find an answer. So during that time, I legitimately saw like so many different types of people. I saw multiple family doctors. I saw naturopaths, therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, even saw a hypnotist at one point. I was literally just like literally willing to try anything and do anything that could potentially get me out of the rut. However, about 2 years into that, I got some blood work done finally. And to my surprise, my testosterone level came back at zero. And I think the normal level in Canada or whatever is between 10 and 27. And mine wasn't like one or two, it was like legitimately. And, you know, the doctor I had at the time just kind of looked at the text and goes, "Oh, like, you're a healthy guy, man. Like, don't worry about it. It's just a mistake." And, you know, my parents and I kind of looked at the test and were like, "No, like, that's a red flag. Like, let's test it again and just make sure." And, you know, sure as shit, the same result came back the next time. And the doctor goes, "Okay, I think we've got a problem here. I'll refer you to an endocrinologist." So, you know, at this point I was in pretty rough shape. I was like literally spending time downtown Toronto at the mental health hospital down there and just kind of hanging on by a thread, quite literally. But anyway, I waited 6 months to get in to see my first endocrinologist. And basically within 2 minutes of seeing him, he told me that it wasn't going to help. He basically accused me of taking steroids because of my physical appearance. And he assumed that because I was taking steroids, that was the reason my natural production was shut off. Wow. You know, meanwhile, I've just worked my entire life. So that was pretty frustrating. Ended up seeing two other endocrinologists who basically said the exact same thing. And then I was lucky enough to eventually find a guy by the name of Dr. Comer. He's out of Burlington and he was actually the head doctor for the Toronto Rock. So he was an endocrinologist, but he worked with a ton of athletes and soldiers and stuff overseas, like the military and that kind of thing. And yeah, basically my experience with him was a lot different. So I walked into his office, you know, little expectation of what was going to happen. I was kind of done with it all at that point. You know, I walked in and, you know, the first question he asked me was if I played sports. I'm like, "Why the fuck are you asking me this now? Like, we're not here to talk about that." But of course, it kind of like piqued my interest a bit. I was like, "Yeah, I played hockey." He's like, "How many concussions have you had?" And he's like, I was like, "I don't know, like 3 or 4, probably a few more." He's like, "Okay, I think I know the problem." And Comer began to explain how when you get a concussion or a brain injury, it causes inflammation in the brain, and that inflammation can lead to the dysfunction of different parts of the brain, specifically the pituitary gland, which produces testosterone, growth hormone, estrogen, all that kind of shit. And kind of rambled on about the science for a bit, but then he told me, you know, kind of the best news ever. He's like, it can be fixed. So basically, Comer put me on hormone replacement therapy to address the issue right away. And basically, after I literally started injections that day after I left his office, and within 3 months, it was like a night and day difference. I was completely like back to normal. I had drive. I could sleep again. I put back on weight. I was happy. I was motivated. I ended up going back to school and finishing that up. And honestly, like, I just had my life back. But like you said before as well, unfortunately, during that three and a half year, 4 guys I played hockey with actually died by suicide. So, you know, my experience is pretty crazy. And I kind of thought to myself, like, you know what? Like, even if I don't know for sure that my buddies went through the exact same thing, I thought that by sharing my experience, I could potentially help somebody else. So I basically packaged up that three and a half years into a Facebook post. I was super shit and bricks. I didn't know if I was going to post it or not. And then I did. And to my surprise, it got a lot of attention. It had like, I don't know, like 4,000 shares in the first couple of days. And, you know, it just kept going and going and going. And in came thousands of messages from people all over the world about the topic of concussions and mental health. So, you know, that was one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. And, you know, ever since then, I kind of always knew that I wanted to do something with it. But right at the time of that post was when I was starting an e-commerce company with my dad. So you're probably going to laugh at this, but I actually spent another 3 years building a handbag brand. I basically sold purses online, and this whole head first thing kind of sat on the back burner. So yeah, we ended up exiting the company a few years ago, and that's when I kind of picked up the ball with the story again, resurfaced it, and, you know, that was the start of Head First, and it kind of morphed into where I am today.
Wow. Yeah, that's first off, like, thank you very much, Cody, for sharing that. As I kind of alluded to before this episode to my listeners, I'm the thankful one who kind of just gets to, you know, sit here and host you and listen to your story and then put it out there. And if even just one person benefits from it, which I know there's going to be far more than just one person, but even if it is only one person hears your story, resonates with it, and then benefits from it, then that's amazing. And that's ultimately why I want to put these out there. And so again, just like, thank you to you for doing what you're doing already and now sharing the episode on the show. And it's always hard for me to like pick one single question to start on after hearing your story like that, but let's do it. So first off, so like, I'm wondering, so at this time when you're going to all these specialists, was there like any, you know, any inquiry whatsoever about something like a head injury, like a history of concussions, or was that just kind of like just never brought up?
I had no idea about the connection between concussions and mental illness until I saw Dr. Comer.
Okay.
So none of the medical professionals that I saw asked me about, I guess, my history in sport or injuries or anything like that, which, and looking back and knowing what I do now, I think is a huge problem.
Yeah. And I find that just incredible and a problem with our system, right? That was never even, it was never even asked. And like, I don't want to dwell on it and, you know, put down like medical professionals or anything like that, because they do an incredible job. They're brilliant. They help so many people, but it really is. It's a problem with the system that this lifestyle, this underlying lifestyle issue, concussions, playing sports, whatever it was just never even considered. I mean, to me, that's just like mind blowing. And I hope that we can make some changes to that. So before you got this lab work done, was there ever a consideration to do that or not?
There was, but not necessarily like a full panel of it. So like the testosterone and stuff wasn't even really looked at. I guess like one thing I just want to bring up to our last point too is with regards to like the concussion piece and the medical professionals, like, yeah, like obviously we wish that they were maybe asking those questions, but I also think it alludes to the fact that there's just like a lack of education in terms of general knowledge about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then also within sports specifically, like the culture within it has made addressing those things really tough, especially when you start to climb up and play sports at a higher level. Like acknowledging a head injury and addressing it properly is pretty hard, especially when, you know, there's the potential of losing a spot or looking like somebody that no one really wants to sit on the sideline, right? And I feel like that's a huge problem too. Like if people were aware of all the different issues that a concussion could potentially cause and were aware of how to deal with it when things come up, I think like a lot of the potential issues could be solved. But at the same time too, like if the doctors and the people treating the injuries ask those kinds of questions, I think, you know, recovery could be shortcutted in a lot of cases.
Right. I'll just give our listeners like a very, very brief overview of basically what you nicely summarized there with the pituitary and testosterone, because I think my listeners are probably pretty familiar now with like the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland, because we talk about hormones a fair bit, but like just to put this into context. So with a head injury, for sure, we can have damage to the hypothalamus, could be directly, could be indirectly, as in could be some actual shearing forces from the initial hit that can damage the structures of the hypothalamus, which can then impair the resulting hormone release, essentially. Could be indirect, like you said, inflammation. That's what I find most interesting, but inflammation can affect really the entire brain, and then hormones become a side effect. And so just to put this into context for people, because I next want to ask you, do you think that this is becoming more common knowledge now that we can have hormonal issues as a result from something like a concussion? And I'll just kind of finish my last thought there for the folks, is that we could really see, like, I mean, any hormonal issue, right, from something like a head injury, because if you have damage to that structure, well, basically every single hormone is regulated by that hypothalamus, by that pituitary, which answers to the hypothalamus. And so if we have damage from basically the conductor, like you said, well, then all the staff working under it, which are our hormones, testosterone, estrogen, insulin, thyroid, these could all be impacted. And as we know, these affect how we feel every single day. So yeah, I'm really curious to hear your thoughts about this. Is do you think this is becoming more common knowledge now that something like a concussion could absolutely 100% lead to, I mean, any of these hormone related issues, whether it be testosterone, whether it be depression, whether it be anxiety?
Yeah, well, I think it is. I think there's still like a lot of work to be done. A lot of, you know, I think still the majority of people have no idea. that's why getting like the story out and sharing it is so, so important. And again, I'm not like an expert when it comes to this stuff too. I just know that that was what the root cause was for me. But I do know that, I mean, the thing that Comer tells me is that around 20% of people who have a mild or moderate concussion end up having some sort of hormone deficiency around 6 months down the line. And like you said too, I think, you know, if it's coming from inflammation, like inflammation can be addressed, right? So that's something that is super interesting to me. And now that I'm learning more about the stuff as well, it's something that I've considered too and looked at like the treatment that I've got from Comer. And I'm like, you know what, is this like a long-term solution here, or is it something that I can proactively address and maybe wean off of over time? But at the end of the day, yeah, I think that, you know, this stuff is becoming a little bit more common knowledge, but I still think that there's a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And I wonder that all the time, right? Cause I mean, you and I have a different lens obviously, and I'm reading about some of these things, the side effects we could get from a concussion, many of which are hormonal. And I read through this stuff and I think to myself, like, do people know this? Cause I mean, I kind of hear this stuff in mainstream media, it might be whatever, I mean, on the front page of a newspaper or something. And the story is usually portrayed in like a surprising fashion, like, you know, popular athlete so-and-so has been experiencing, you know, whatever it is, depression or anxiety, so on and so forth. They were shocked to find out that it could be from concussion. And like, when I see something like that, I'm like, well, no kidding. Like, that's, you know, of course that can happen. But like you said, it's, I don't know if it's mainstream yet. And so, yeah, I just wonder that. And again, I think that's one of the other awesome, valuable things with your work is getting that out to people, hearing your story, because ultimately that's how most people learn, I think, is personal stories from others.
And the other thing too, is again, I'm not a concussion expert, but I do know that they can lead to a number of other issues too, like gut issues, you know, hearing issues, visual issues, balance issues, tons of different shit that you wouldn't even think of. Most people just associate like a brain injury or like concussion to, you know, a headache or losing consciousness or memory loss or like those typical classical things. Well, meanwhile, they can affect so many different aspects of your health that can really impact your ability to just like live a normal life.
Yeah. And I definitely later on want to talk a little bit more about what you experienced with the gut. Cause I remember when we worked together, that was one of your major goals, was to improve how your gut felt. And there's some really interesting connections there. Like the amount of time we see gut issues after a concussion is incredible, which is, it's just so interesting. But I'd love to know, what are some of the things that you think had the biggest impact for you? So in addition to, you got this lab work, you had exogenous testosterone, started bumping that up from zero, which, I mean, that alone obviously would make someone feel just so much better. In addition to that, what were some of the most impactful changes you made? And I mean, it could be anything, could be meditation, supplements, diet, exercise, whatever.
Yeah, I think obviously like the hormone replacement therapy was the biggest game changer, right? Because that addressed the issue like specifically. But I think the biggest things, I mean, just really boil down to simple shit. It's like just making sure that I'm sleeping properly. You know, it's dialing in with the nutrition. You know, when I was going through my shit, I was drinking a ton. So obviously cleaning that up made a massive difference. You know, I've always loved to be in the gym and play sports and that kind of stuff, but continuing to make an effort to move my body every day. And then also too, like, especially for people like you and I, who are just like inherently really driven and we're kind of like natural born high achievers. And, you know, whether it's sports or work, we just get so entrenched with it. We're constantly building and going and going. Another thing that's really helped me is just letting go of that and being able to like step back and have some fun and carving out some time in my day to do things that light me up and to hang out with people that I enjoy. I feel like that stuff is so important and is often really overlooked. But, you know, when you look at like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, for example, like it's pretty hard to get to the top of that thing without building a solid foundation, right? Like you can't build a nice house on a shit foundation. So it's just a matter of making sure that you have those things in place before you, you know, really try to strive and do more than, yeah, oftentimes we think we can bite off more than we can chew and we end up burning ourselves. So it's just making sure that we got the basis covered.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the idea of making more time for like the social aspect. If I think back to some points, I would probably during like probably mid-20s, like I'm 30 now, but there's definitely some times about around that time, you know, mid-20s where I definitely got more consumed than I should have with things like exercise, nutrition, maybe a bit of business, although I wasn't entirely into that yet, and just like put the social life on the back burner. And now I've, you know, come back to that more and I'm like, what was I doing? Like this is one of the most important things, right? getting out on the course with friends, you know, whatever. So, and yeah, I think there's so much crossover between the psychology with the physiology. So literally how we feel with our relationships and whatnot, and how that then affects our physiology. So how that affects things like hormones and whatnot. So Cody, with the, so you had this lab work, we saw testosterone was obviously in the toilet. Was there any other markers that popped up on there, or any other important points that Dr. Comer brought up?
Not really, to be honest with you. I mean, the only real thing that I was addressing from that original blood work was like the testosterone and like all the hormones associated with the pituitary. So I was on, he prescribed me TRT, like testosterone replacement. I'm on another thing called Pregnol. So that, I guess, helps stimulate natural, I don't know what it does, to be honest with you. So that was another thing that he addressed. And then also thyroid. And then in addition to that, just in terms of like optimizing like brain health and stuff, just high doses of making sure that I'm, you know, I've got high doses of like a high quality, like omega, like fish oil, and then vitamin D as well. So those were all things that Comer addressed.
That's awesome. So I think the Pregnol mimics like luteinizing hormone. So if we look at that pathway, it would be hypothalamus to pituitary to then eventually luteinizing hormone that goes to the testes in males. And then that helps to produce testosterone. So I like where this guy's head's at. That's for sure. That to me sounds more of like that's like a retraining your body, I think, to then make its own testosterone.
Yeah, that was, I guess, like the methodology behind it. And then also to like maintain and preserve fertility.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah. There's always perk up when I hear like omega-3 fish oil and vitamin D and whatnot. Yeah. Have these been any markers that maybe you've had measured in recent years, or were they initially measured? Just curious if that ever came up as well.
Yeah. So I'm sure they were measured in like the original blood test, but they weren't really paid attention to. I'm sure they were just in the normal range, which is a whole other conversation, I feel like. And then, yeah, I mean, in terms of like my blood work now, I get it done semi-annually. And those things are looked at, but like I said, I'm taking high doses and my diet's pretty good. So those things seem to be in place, but yeah, back to the normal range thing. Like, I mean, that test I did 5 years ago, 6 years ago, whenever that was, like, I mean, it's frustrating because in terms of what Comer tells me, again, I'm not a doctor, but the normal range is just where the majority of the population lies. It's not necessarily what's optimal. So, you know, if you're on the upper or lower end of some of those things, it could be a reason as to like why you're feeling like shit. But at the end of the day, because it's not outside of that range, it's not addressed. But you know, it is what it is, and that's why it's so important to educate ourselves.
Right. Yeah. And it is interesting how the averages they have moved and will continue to move. So as we get sicker as a population, so too do the averages. And so, you know, you could be the exact same health now versus 30 years ago. Not that that's realistic, but hypothetically. And nowadays you'd be told you're in perfect health. 30 years ago, they might have told you like, hey, you need to make some serious changes. Like you're on the way to some possible chronic illness here. We need to switch things up. So when we talk about medical treatment nowadays, there's obviously a couple different avenues we can go down. This isn't the proper way to sort this by any means, but just for simplicity, we might say we could go a physical route, which would be like a medical doctor. Maybe we could say we go a mental route. Again, that's like a gross oversimplification and doesn't do it justice, but just for simplicity today. So, and by mental, I mean like a psychologist. So can you tell us if you had any experience with like other avenues, Cody, in addition to medical doctors, maybe a psychologist or something similar?
Yeah. So when I was going through my stuff, obviously the first stop was the family doctor. And I actually saw a few other family doctors too, just because I moved around a little bit. So between them and then, you know, the psychologist and the psychiatrist that I saw, you know, it was kind of it was an interesting experience. You go into those meetings and, you know, a lot of the time a diagnosis is made and medications administered without, you know, necessarily looking at like the lifestyle factors and the previous experiences that are shaping the belief systems that are fueling the unhealthy behavior in the first place. You know, I definitely think that, you know, clinical professional help obviously has merit and medication obviously has merit too. But honestly, just because of the space that I'm in, I feel like that stuff and the amount that I know now, I feel like those things are, you know, labels and medications are tossed around a lot more than they necessarily need. You know, I think it's a lot easier to buy into the label and to the idea that you've got like a clinical issue than it is to actually address the underlying shit that's causing the problem in the first place. And I feel like that's a huge reason why so many people are just like stuck in a box of thinking that they have a clinical issue and can't necessarily break out of it. So it's a really tricky thing to navigate. It's a really tricky situation. Again, I think that, you know, like clinical mental health has a huge, you know, there's obviously a need for it, and it's very important. And obviously medication can be a fantastic tool, but at the same time too, those things are a lot easier to buy into than to actually address the hard shit, which is, you know, changing your lifestyle, going after shit you actually want, and addressing the belief systems that are fueling the unhealthy behaviors in the first place. So yeah, that's
maybe a lack right now of actually digging into maybe like lifestyle and some other contributing factors instead of just like solely focusing on, hey, here's the diagnosis, here's what you have. Does that make sense?
Exactly. So say, for example, Sally goes to a psychologist and she's saying that she can't escape her negative thoughts. She's depressed. She's anxious. She can't go to school. You know, meanwhile, she's sleeping like shit. She's eating like shit. She's not moving her body. She's not doing any sort of, you know, reflective practice. She's not making an effort to go out and see her friends. You know, those things aren't necessarily looked at, but like you put a healthy person in those situations too. Like you can get away with, you know, a night or two of shitty sleep, but you give yourself a week of shitty sleep, you give yourself a month of shitty sleep, see where you are. And like the same thing with eating and like lack of exercise and all that kind of stuff. Like if you don't have your bases covered, how the fuck can you expect to show up at your best and be able to feel and perform? And at the same time too, when you're not doing those things, it's really easy to get used to feeling like shit, right? And then, you know, you're in an unresourceful state and you're looking for a quick fix or an answer to kind of break yourself out of it. And that's where, you know, a lot of the time the diagnosis is just something that somebody can just buy into. And, you know, people like to buy into the idea that, you know, they don't have to change or that the behavior is acceptable because it's easier to do that than address the hardship.
Yeah. Well said. Very well said. I mean, I totally agree with all of that from more of like a outside perspective. I haven't had the same personal experience as you, but it does seem that we're nowadays kind of just searching for that diagnosis, right? We want to know what it is. We want to know what it is. And maybe what people don't appreciate is that there's some like general underlying issues, hormone mm-hmm. dysfunction, inflammation, gut issues, three that come to mind right away. All of these can at least in part contribute to basically every single mental illness, right? Excess inflammation, that could make us feel depressed. Gut issues, that could increase inflammation, make us feel depressed. I mean, all these things are just perfectly connected. My point here is that, as you mentioned, these could also be created, so the gut issues, the inflammation, and so on, just by crappy lifestyle. And if we've done that for 10 years, 20 years more, maybe we lose sight of this. And like you said, like, I mean, anyone try, you know, like you said, try going a month with low sleep, try eating from McDonald's every single day for 3 months in a row, try going from being active every single day to sitting on your couch, watching Netflix, not going outside ever, every single day. Tell me how you feel in 3 to 6 months. Like, you're going to feel pretty damn crappy. And you're going to have a lot of these symptoms of depression, anxiety. And again, I'm not saying that we can just chalk every one of these symptoms up to lifestyle. No, definitely not, because these things are so incredibly multifactorial. Like, there's so many factors that come into play here. But I just fully agree there. Like, personally, my pet peeve is that we don't even acknowledge these, right? We don't even ask about them or inquire about them, which is what you're explaining to us as well. And I guess so. Yeah. And like you said earlier, it's kind of like, it's just like trying to build a house on a crappy foundation. Like, it might work for a little bit, but eventually it will crumble.
Yeah. It's because it's hard. And those self-sabotaging behaviors are giving you some sort of like certainty and some sort of, you know, pleasure. Right. And it's really hard to break those patterns, and all those things are fueled from belief systems in the past. So unless you really address those things and dismantle them and decide what you want to believe instead and map out the behaviors that are in alignment with where you want to go, it can be really hard to identify what you need to do in the first place, and then B, how can you set up systems and commitments to self in order to do that? And a lot of the time too, it involves associating pain to your current situation and all the shitty things that you're doing and what you're not doing, and pleasure to the hard work. And at the end of the day, that shit's hard. And oftentimes that's why a third party or a neutral source is so important. That accountability aspect is so huge in terms of not only the education piece, but like holding somebody accountable to taking those actions. You know, it's really easy to eat well for a week, but it's harder to stick to that for, you know, 3 to 6 months and make that part of your identity. So that's why like my work right now has been so rewarding. It's been able to help people break these patterns. And it's not like I'm doing anything crazy. I'm just asking the right questions and holding people accountable. Because 99% of the time, people already know what they need to do.
That's a great segue. I'd love to learn more about that. So can you tell us about some of your experiences with others, whether that be, you know, it could be working with others, it could be just through acquaintance, hearing from people. Like what are some of the most, I guess, most common scenarios that you see people in? Or maybe a better way to put that would be is some of the most common things that you see people struggling with.
So I think right off the bat, I mean, there's a few different things. Like number one is like sharing my experiences obviously created space for other people to look inside of themselves and be like, yo, I may be experiencing this too. And they've been able to like raise their hand and make the conscious decision to either go get help or change your lifestyle or do whatever it is to make a positive change. And that has been really awesome to see. A lot of the times too, people come to me and they're like, you know, I'm super anxious. I'm super depressed. I feel lost. I feel stuck. And, you know, a lot of the times it's just a matter of doing one or two things that they know they need to do to alleviate that pressure and to get feeling better. So again, it's just asking the right questions. And again, 99% of the time, people already know what they need to do. It's just a matter of actually fucking doing it. And then in terms of working with people, you know, my experience coaching is relatively new to me. You know, originally I slapped together a program because people were asking me to help them with this kind of stuff. And, you know, my practice has evolved over time between just fucking throwing myself in the fire and also accumulating and getting some certifications and partnering with a really a mentor and somebody that I look up to from this perspective. But in terms of my practice right now, you know, people often come to me. I find the majority of people are high achievers or athletes or entrepreneurs or whatever. And, you know, they're hitting a wall. They don't know what to do next. They feel burnt out. They feel stressed. They're not fulfilled in whatever they're doing. And basically what I end up helping them do is, you know, kind of get out of their head and into their heart and kind of paint the picture of, you know, what a 10 out of 10 actually looks like for them. Like, fuck other people's opinions. What do they actually want to do? And from there, what we do is, you know, after we paint that picture and get super clear in terms of where they want to go and what's important, we set intentions for them to close the gap between where they are and where they want to go. And we address the resistance that's preventing them from, you know, fulfilling those commitments and those intentions to self. And what that is the belief system. So what we do is we identify all the shitty emotions that are coming up, the self-doubt, the frustration, the anger, the confusion that's preventing them from taking action on that stuff. And we really dig deep and find out the root cause of, you know, we find out the belief systems that are causing that behavior in the first place. And we dismantle them by bringing more context to the situation, situations which often came from childhood. We decide what they want to believe instead. And then we focus on just making small commitments to self every day that are in alignment with where they want to go. And my role as a coach is just to really, again, just ask the right questions and to hold these people accountable to making these small changes. And, you know, little by little, a little becomes a lot. Like it's kind of fucking crazy what you can accomplish in 3 months of just doing the right fucking thing every day. So it's been super rewarding. Like I've worked with people that came to me that were, you know, out of work and depressed and drinking every day. And, you know, I mean, with my work, I'm not qualified to work with people with clinical issues, and I make that very clear. But I've literally been a part of helping somebody get sober, getting a job. One person in specific particular, he was literally in AA, in and out of AA, was unemployed, living in his parents' house. Now he got a job at a tech company. Now he's sober. Now he's back playing hockey 3 times a week. Now he's like literally just got accepted to 2 MBA programs of his choice. And he's got his shit back together. And, you know, in terms of, I'm not taking credit for it. All I did was ask questions and hold the guy accountable. Right. And yeah, it's been super rewarding to just kind of help people get out of their own way and take action on shit. It's at the end of the day, it's really not that complicated. It's just a matter of breaking out of those patterns and having that objective, neutral party come in and help you bring context as to like why you're, you know, self-sabotaging yourself. So it's been, yeah, I'm rambling, but it's been really fucking rewarding and something that I'm going to continue doing for sure.
No, that's awesome. That's what I want you to do. Just ramble. That's awesome stuff. Unbelievable to hear. You mentioned things like self-doubt. Where do you think a lot of that comes from nowadays? Like, do you have a theory or an opinion on maybe why that's that it's more common now? Again, we weren't alive 40, 50 years ago, but some of these things are on the rise. You'd think self-doubt maybe one of those. So yeah, I'm curious on your thoughts. Like what do you think goes into that?
Well, anytime there's an element of uncertainty, like self-doubt's a natural thing that's going to come up, right? Self-doubt's kind of par for the course if you're going to be pushing your comfort zone and trying to do things that you want to do. I think a lot of it stems from comparison, you know, thinking that, you know, we should be further along than we currently are. I think a lot of it stems from the belief systems of not being good enough or not worthy enough or not deserving enough or whatever. A lot of the times those things are picked up and cultivated from childhood and our experiences early on. And, you know, once we adopt those things, we're constantly looking for proof and evidence as to like why we're not good enough, why we shouldn't be able to do these things and why we can't break these patterns. So in terms of breaking, you know, out of that self-doubt, it's really just, you know, doing the small shit and it's figuring out like what are the building blocks in order to get me from point A to point B and how can I build up the confidence and the competence in order to, you know, get over that hurdle. But at the end of the day, like no amount of thinking about shit is going to change the self-doubt. It comes down to action and holding yourself accountable to pushing your comfort zone and just getting better. And on top of that too, I think a lot of the self-doubt comes from perfection. The idea that we need, you know, do things fucking perfectly when in reality, perfect doesn't exist. Right. It's just, we got to get out of our own way and just do shit and throw shit at the wall and see what sticks. And over time, we can kind of quiet that voice down. But yeah, I think self-doubt's really common and I don't think we can ever really get rid of it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's an interesting point too. Maybe at some level, a little bit of it is a good thing and too much, obviously not a good thing. Yeah, that's very interesting.
I think if you never experience it, you're probably pretty complacent, right?
Yeah. So social media, what, if any, do you think that... Sorry, do you think that has an effect on some of these behaviors, whether positive or negative?
For sure. Like, I mean, and the first thing I want to say is social media is a tool. Fire is a tool. Fire can cook your food or it can burn your house down. Social media, like social media can help you build a business and connect with awesome people, or it can fuel comparison and unhealthy behaviors. And you can fall down a rabbit hole of watching TikTok for 5 hours and end up procrastinating, not doing anything and feeling like shit about yourself. Right. So I think social media is neither inherently good nor bad, but I think just like the access we have and the human highlight reel that we're exposed to on a regular basis does fuel that comparison. And as a result can make us feel like shit because we're often reminded that we're not as far along as we should be, or we're not as far along as Sally across the street. And, you know, if we're not looking at it from an objective perspective and taking a step back and really addressing the thoughts and things that the social media is fueling in the first place, then it can be really troublesome. So I think it's really important to check in with yourself, check in with your intentions, and to maybe take a step back from it once in a while just to make sure that it's not, you know, leading you down a self-sabotaging path, because it's inherently built to capture your attention. And, you know, just the design of it in general is not really conducive to what we're supposed to be doing, right? Like humans aren't supposed to be on Instagram.
Yeah, I love that. What you said there is be objective and have intentions. I like that a lot. I've been trying to do something similar to that lately, like, and I'm by no means perfect with it, but if I find myself on there scrolling and not reading captions, then I tell myself, all right, it's time to get off, because what's your intention now of being on here? You're just scrolling through doing, you know, God knows what happens in the brain when you're just looking at these pictures. You mentioned some of them. You're probably comparing yourself. You're wondering what the hell you're doing, why you're sitting on the couch looking at these, and why you're not in the gym like that guy or gal is, why you don't look that good, whatever. And so that was just kind of like my own little rule that I made up, because I do my best to use it for information, to try and put good information out there, to try and find good, valuable information, because there's a ton. And I know that I'm not doing that if I'm just mindlessly scrolling. And so that's just my own. Again, I'm far from perfect, still pretty shitty at it, to be honest. But yeah,
we all have our moments. But I think the biggest thing comes down to just like being aware of it, bringing awareness to all the situations where we're engaging with it in an unhealthy way, and then figuring out what we need to do to break out of those behaviors. Sometimes it's just a matter of like setting boundaries and you know, having limits and that kind of stuff. And sometimes it goes a little bit deeper than that. But yeah, the first step is like bringing awareness to all the times where we fall down that hole or catch yourself comparing, and then really asking ourselves like what we need to do in order to break out of that. Because at the end of the day, like mindlessly scrolling, getting jealous, fucking going down the explore page forever and looking at a bunch of memes and shit, and like at the end of the day, it's not really going to get us to where we want to go. right? And it's going to 99% of the time, it's going to make us feel like shit. So it's like, how can we catch ourselves? And then B, how can we break out of it?
Yeah, it's so bizarre sometimes. I will find myself sometimes, you know, whatever, taking a break from work, relaxing. And I have like this, it's almost like this unconscious desire to reach into my pocket or to grab my phone and open up Instagram. And some, again, not always, but sometimes I'll catch myself and just be like, what are you doing? Like, this is what you're doing to like kill time because you're bored. Like, there's so many other freaking things you could be doing right now. If you don't have an intention to go on there, like, what are you doing? Be useful. I mean, closing your eyes and having a 20-minute nap is going to probably be more valuable than, you know, going on there and being mindless. If you're going on there, or at least in my situation, if I'm going on there to look at a specific, you know, post or whatever, like, you know, absolutely. But if I'm just doing it mindlessly and answering to that inner addiction is basically what it is. Essentially, I do my best to catch myself, but like you said, I mean, it's so hard to do.
Yeah. Like, I mean, without getting too deep into like the underlying like reasons for that behavior, like one question that people can ask themselves is, you know, is this behavior right now, so impulsively grabbing my phone and doing whatever, helping or hurting me? Right. And if it's hurting you, then what can you do instead?
Yeah. I love that. I love tools like that. That's awesome. So I mentioned earlier, I do want to get into a little bit of the gut stuff in our last couple minutes and just kind of talk briefly about how you originally felt, how that got better, if it did. I'll just like in the time being, just kind of like list a couple things here that I worked on with Cody. So obviously the gut thing was a focus for us. So we did use some glutamine. We used magnesium. I'm not going to say why, because you guys listening are probably sick of me talking about magnesium, but we know that magnesium just drops dramatically after traumatic brain injuries. Does it ever recover? Hard to say. It's pretty commonly deficient. Three, clearly, we focused on that. We focused on creatine. And then a couple other things to really try and hone in on testosterone too. So like zinc is huge for this. Boron, actually, a trace mineral, doesn't get really any attention, but boron's incredible. Really powerful anti-inflammatory effects just naturally because it is a trace mineral. And it's also been shown to elevate testosterone when boron is deficient. And like, you're not really getting boron from diet unless you're eating like bone meal or something like that, I'm pretty sure. And who really does that nowadays? So yeah, these are just some of the things that we focused on. Metabolic flexibility was a big one. So trying to like retrain the body to use both glucose and fat for fuel, because there's a funny, it's almost like there's a little break in the system after some concussions, it seems, where the brain becomes inefficient at utilizing sugar or glucose for energy. And so training it, if it forgot, and that's a separate conversation, to use fat for energy is can be a really helpful focus too. So yeah, with the gut stuff, Cody, was that something that kind of just came on gradually, maybe throughout your hockey playing days, or was there a time where you kind of vividly remember that it was all of a sudden bad? Or
I don't think there was, I mean, I didn't, back when I was like playing hockey and stuff, I didn't really notice this stuff. Like, I was back in school, I was playing hockey, drinking on the weekends, just doing whatever. Didn't really pay too much attention to it. Where I really started to notice the issue was, again, just so I started to notice that I was getting, like, in the last couple of years, especially just being really entrenched in my business, I wanted to be able to show up and be able to be focused and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, just really noticed that I had a lot of brain fog, especially after a weekend, because I'd often go out and drink and carry on and all that kind of stuff. And then also, like, my gut would kind of be off. I just wouldn't feel good. And that's when I really came to you, and we made a few simple changes that have been really super, super helpful.
Isn't it funny how there's a little bit of a, like, a health shaming culture where, like, saying something like that, you know, my gut's not good, so no thank you, I'm going to pass on this food, which is probably going to make it worse. Something like that is, have you ever felt that, like a little bit of that health shaming? Maybe it's just Again, it could just be my perception of this, but little things like that I find are interesting, how it makes even something like that tough to talk about sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it kind of just boils back down to the question, like, is this shit going to help me or hurt me?
Yeah.
Right. If it's gonna hurt you, then you probably shouldn't consume it. If you know, like, you already know what you eat makes you feel like shit, or you know, if you're eating something from a box or a bag, like, it's not good for you, right? Yeah. But it's just a matter of, like, doing the right thing more consistently. And with you, you really helped me identify those things that I should be doing more consistently. Like, it just made me aware of the right decisions that I know I should have made. But then you also brought some things to my attention that I wasn't aware of, that I've introduced into my, I guess, my lifestyle and my way of eating that have been super helpful.
Awesome. Good to hear. Really good to hear. So before we wrap things up, I'm curious to hear, do you have any, say, daily health habits or protocols or regimes that you just absolutely swear by? And again, this could be a supplement, a food, exercise, some type of mindfulness routine, journaling. If you had to pick maybe one or two, is there anything?
The biggest thing for, I think, the listeners is to find what works for you. I think anytime that somebody preaches their own way of doing shit onto you and says that that's the only way that you can do things, you know, I'd really try to question that. For me, I think what's most important is, A, like, sleep is huge. I notice, like, if I don't get at least 7 hours of sleep a night, like, I can feel it. Next is obviously nutrition, and maybe just to touch on a few things that, you know, you really helped me with. You know, I was relying on coffee to get me through the day before. And, you know, I feel like that was a huge source of some of my issues, and it was impacting my sleep too. So I love having my morning cup of coffee. I'll usually have a second cup later on in the day. It's just a little boost, and just because I enjoy having it. But just focusing on, you know, drinking enough water. If I'm going to have coffee, it's got to be good coffee, not shitty Tim Hortons garbage. And then in terms of the food, is honestly just like focusing on eating like whole, nutritious, good fucking food, like 90% of the time. Like, I still have my treats on the weekends or whenever I want to have them, but 90% of the food that I put in my body is stuff that I know is going to make me feel good. Introducing some of the things that you brought to my attention has been super helpful too. So in terms of like my breakfast and stuff, I'm eating whole eggs cooked in butter, you know, with a side of berries. Like, it's pretty simple.
Yeah,
shit.
Yeah.
But making that change and getting away from, like, you know, having a bagel or like with that and whatever has honestly been pretty huge. But in terms of like daily habits, A, sleep, B, eating shit that I know is going to help me, C, drinking water. And then obviously I just love like working out and moving my body. So just making sure that I get in something every day. I think a lot of people too overcomplicate what that needs to look like. And honestly, we just got to find what works for us and what we enjoy and what we can stick to. And yeah, at the end of the day, just like moving your body and doing the right stuff is so important.
Yeah. I think we'll have to do another episode in the future because we didn't even get to touch on exercise. So that'll be next time, hopefully. Yeah. It's amazing. Like, probably 99% of the stuff is just super basic, and it's just like you said, actually making those changes, and it's overcoming the uphill battle that we face every single day. There's fast food on every single street corner. There's greater access to processed food than whole foods, and that's only becoming worse. So it's just making the decisions and yeah, overcoming that David versus Goliath scenario, if you will. So yeah, thank you very much, Cody, again, for coming on, for sharing your story. Can you give us some contact information? Where can people find you?
Yeah, for sure. So I mean, like, the main spot, I'm actually not on social media as much as I used to be, but the main spot is Instagram. So it's just like @headfirstmovement. And then I've got a website too. It's just headfirstmovement.com. But yeah, that's where you can find me. So if you have any questions or want to reach out about the coaching stuff, just shoot me a dart or a DM and we can chat.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Cody.
Awesome, man. That was great.